I want to just kind of review, because what we said this morning is the same for the ladies as well. God saw that Adam was lonely, and then he said, that's not good. And so God took that loneliness away when he made for Adam Eve. And so God made both male and female, and he created both of them after his image. And so each has a piece of God, an eternal part. And that's why we're here tonight, is to make sure that we understand what our Creator would have us to do, that one day we can spend eternity with Him. Probably one of the most touching things I've heard was, a few years ago, a member of the church in the area passed away. And it was kind of sudden in many ways. And the passage says that you do err not knowing the Scriptures. We're not married in heaven. And he said to his wife, he said, I know that we're not married in heaven, but I hope we can be best friends. Now, you just think about how sweet that was. And he, as I said, he has passed away. So traveling through life with someone is very special. And so God understood how important it was in this relationship. And so that loneliness was taken away. And then we wanted to put these points up again, because many marriages have been ruined because of not understanding any one of these four things. And that is that there is a separation, that it is a permanent thing. What God has joined together, let not man put asunder. That's a very serious and sober thing, and there's an acceptance there. There are two that become one flesh in a very intimate way. And then, of course, that last part is that there is intimacy, and that is to be only found in the marriage bed. And that is, God will judge the adulterers and fornicators, because the bed is to be undefiled. So that is true. Now, in this day and age, a lot of times it is the and especially perhaps in the church, a lot of times it's the man was not faithful to his wife. Well, there's usually a woman involved in that unfaithfulness. And unfortunately, many times it's not just somebody that was at work. It is somebody that's actually sitting right there in the same congregation. And that's very sad. And I could stop and just tell you, for instance, preachers, elders, deacons, members, just all kinds of stories that I have heard and know about over the years. But that's not what we want to do. What we want to do is we want to focus in on what do we do to make sure that doesn't happen. And that is understanding that the man has his role and the woman has her role, as God has designed it. God is the one that has determined what is to be expected of the wife and what her role is in the marriage. And so we're not going to follow the culture of America, because it is, as I said this morning, it is completely off, completely bankrupt on all of this. And it's very, very unfortunate, but that is the time that we live in. And so we have to go back and we have to say, but we're going to look at the Scriptures. And this is what we're going to do. We're going to follow the Scriptures. So like this morning, and I thought about this just a moment ago, I actually, at the end of the lesson this morning, whether the ladies caught it or not, I think I already told you your two points. And I thought, I wonder, did anybody pick up on the things that I actually told you? Remember, so what are the men supposed to do? Lead her and love her. And so tonight, the ladies, you have two things. And it's going to be, you need to follow him and you need to respect him. And so we want to talk about those two things. Those are two primary commands that I can talk about a lot of different things, and they can funnel into those two things. Now, you might wonder, because I, in giving thought to this, should this be the other way around? Well, if I don't respect him, I'm not going to follow him. And you can make a good case about that. But I've put him in the responsibility of following and respecting him. And so whichever way, just understand that it is very important. So we're going to go to our scripture reading in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 22. It is very clear, wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. So when you do this, you're being submissive and in subjection to the Lord himself. And we'll be talking about this word. God has commanded that the husband must lead. And if he must lead, what that means is that the wife must learn to follow his lead. It just really is that that's the way it has to be. It's a learning thing. It may not be something that is your strength. It may not be a man who was born and he's got all these strong leadership characteristics, but he must learn to lead. If he's going to be pleasing to God, he must learn to do this. And so it is with the wife. She may like to have things and have maybe a more dominant personality and things of that nature, but she must learn to follow him. Because a home cannot survive with two heads. It just can't, any more than a physical body has two heads. And the Bible uses pretty straightforward and clear language that we can understand, and things that we see are not normal in what we would call nature, in that you don't see people walking around with two heads. We would say there is something wrong. We've got to separate that. That's just they're deformed in some way. It just doesn't work that way. And so God knowing that, there's a head and a body. And in the husband and wife relationship, there is the head that is the husband, and there is the wife who is to follow him. And I will say it again, as I said this morning, the man should not lord over his wife as if he's inferior or he is superior to her. We're not talking about some kind of she is inferior, you are inferior as a wife. There may be cultures that do that, but for the Christian, we know that this is a matter of order and design by God. If God says that the husband is to be the head of the wife, that means that the wife is to be in subjection or to submit to her own husband. It has to be that way. That's not something that you just, again, the wife shouldn't go to the husband and say, look, you're not any good at this, let's just flip these roles. Well, that would be contrary to the Word of God, and so we don't want to do that. And I know everybody understands that. But us figuring how to do this, how to learn to do this and to do this well. Because, again, it's not a matter of inferiority. It's a matter of how God has designed us. And I want to make this point that God created man to lead. It's in his DNA. And God created woman to be a helpmeet and a follower. It's in her DNA. God did not wire us and then say, you're going to have to go contrary to everything in the way I've designed you. No, he made us for the roles. And so we need to recognize that God didn't make a mistake. This is something that he has established. So the first thing that we want to look at, and it's restated here in verse 24 of chapter 5, he says not only is that she is to, there in verse 22, submit to her husband, therefore just as the church is subject to Christ, let the wives be, and be what? Subject to their own husbands in everything. So now we've got not only this word in verse 22 is to submit, now we have a word that is to be subject to, and so they're the same, and so we'll be talking about that, but the wife is to submit to the husband for the marriage to work correct, for it to work right. And so we need to recognize that. Now, unfortunately, submission in our day and age is an evil thing. It's a put down. It's a inferior type of word. And it's not that way at all in the Scriptures. To reinforce that, outside of Brother Bob and Sister Nelda in that wedding, that's the only wedding I've done here. I didn't do any in Virginia. I guess I'm more of a funeral person. So, but early on, when I first started preaching, I did about four weddings in pretty close proximity. And the two that I thought would last have been dissolved, and the ones that I wondered, well, they're doing strong. Two of the weddings, there was a real challenge of whether or not I was going to talk about submission in whatever I might say in the wedding ceremony. And one came down to, I really thought that I was going to have to look at them the day of and say, you're going to have to find somebody else to do this wedding. Because I'm not going to talk to your daughter and tell her that none of this matters. Just good luck. And I'm thankful to say that those two are very much together, and I'm very thrilled about that. But there was a challenge on this idea of using the word submission or being subject to. So it has this evil connotation, but it is a necessary thing in our day-to-day order. It's all around us. Tomorrow, I'll pick on Dale. Dale's going to go to work. Dale's got people under him that are going to have to submit to his authority and leadership. But you're not the boss, are you? You got a boss over you who's got two or three all the way up to whoever's at the top seat, right? So you're in this position that they say you're in the middle management and you got it coming from both sides. So that's a lot. You know, there's a lot there. But he's having to do this. So tomorrow he's got people to answer to. He has to follow their lead. They don't say, Dale, just do it, and it doesn't matter, you know, with companies in your hands, however you want to do it, great. It just doesn't work that way. He's got ways that he's supposed to do this, and he's supposed to pass that down. And it's the same with you, you know, in your job. We all have this idea of being subject to those that are above us in authority. It's true in the church if it has elders. It's true just in general creation that Christ is subject to the Father, the man to Christ, the woman to man. I mean, we studied that in Corinthians, and it's just there's an order here of where we all have this. Okay, let me back up and just slow down. My thought here is I have to submit to Christ, and I'm submitting to Christ when I am the head of my house. Now, in the role, so the wife submits to the husband, but who's she submitting to? To Christ. I mean, she's doing this because she wants to please, ultimately, Christ, the head of the church. And that equates to the Father and the Holy Spirit, you know, God in general, the Godhead. So you're doing this on a regular basis. I mean, we have assembled, we have done, and what thoughts around the table with Tommy, you know, we do this, we've been instructed to remember this. What are we doing? We're submitting to the will of God. So the wife is to be subject to her husband, but she's to be subject to her husband like the church is subject to Christ. You remember, husband, I said, that's a tall order. I said, you remember, husbands are supposed to love their wives like Christ loved the church. Well, wives, you're supposed to submit to your husband like the church does to Christ. And what's very interesting about that whole context in Ephesians chapter 5 is what Paul is really talking about is he's trying to help us fully understand Christ and His church. And he's using the husband and wife relationship. And I've always scratched my head because here I am preaching out of this, but it's almost like he's saying, you know this is true in the husband and wife relationship. If you can understand that, that's Christ in His church. You see, but we have to flip that around and get the dual teaching and the fact that, guess what, I learn a lot about what it means to be a husband, and the wife learns a lot about how it is to be a wife. Now, the reality is submission is not coerced. It's a free will, just like the man can choose to lead or not lead. And so it is with the wife. She can voluntarily, on her own free will, submit to her husband because she wants to be pleasing to God. Or she can choose not to do that. And when you choose not to do that, again, you're not pleasing to Christ. And so there's going to be friction. There's going to be problems. So a husband who is subject to Christ, he leads his home. And the wife is going to follow him. So he leads and loves her, and she is going to be subject to Christ and follow him. Now, it goes without saying, but I'm going to say it because you might be thinking it, but what if he's asking me to do something that's sinful and wrong? Well, we always know and understand that in Acts chapter 5 and verse 29, they said we ought to obey God rather than men. And so, yes, we don't want to sin because our spouse is asking us to sin. You know, he says, come rob a bank with me. And he's like, well, I got to follow him and rob a bank. No, you are obedient to God. But the things that we're talking about, and as we go further into this, we're not talking about that. We're trying to say, how can I, as a wife, do the things that are right, that are going to make my marriage as God would have it? And so what is my role? What is my part? And so what does it look like when a wife is following her husband? Well, turn over to Titus chapter 2 and in verse 5. Now, if you were to, like I said at the start, I've got 3 pages for the men, 2 for the ladies. It's the opposite here in Titus chapter 2 when he talks to each individual group, if you would, older men, older women, younger men, younger women. You know, so there's a lot of teaching. If you look at this, you'll say, wait a minute, the women got a lot more teaching here than the men, if you're counting verses. But I always look at these things and say, what a blessing to have God speak on these things. And if he takes 6 verses to help me, then so be it. But all of this is meant to challenge us to be the kind of people that we are to be. So here he says in verse 5, to be discreet. Older women teach the younger women, discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their own husbands. So this word obedience is actually translated submissive. In the ESV, it's translated subject in the New American Standard Version. So it's actually the same word that's used in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 22, the same word that's used in Ephesians 5 verse 24. Now that's good to know, because it's interesting, because this could say to be subject or submissive to her husband. But the New King James uses the word obedient. And so help him. Help him. Understand that you're trying to function well together. The goal is for both the husband and the wife to inherit eternal life, joint heirs. And so help him in the decisions that he makes. There's going and should be discussion. It goes without saying that the husband should want to hear what his wife has to say. And so I didn't address that, but if you got a husband that's just like pound, 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 I'm the boss, pound his chest, he needs some help. So yes, a loving husband is going to say we need to come to a solid conclusion. Now what I'm getting at is, at some point in time, somebody has to say, this is what we're going to do. And that's his decision. And so it may be that it's not exactly what you would like to have had happen. Maybe it's the opposite. And he says, no, this is what we're going to do. What is your responsibility at that time? Well, you have to submit and be subject and follow. And you don't sit around waiting to say, I told you so. Because you don't want him to fail. You don't want the family to fail. You don't want to have those types of feelings, like, I told you so. I knew this was going to go this way. And you may be right. And he may learn and not do that again. But again, it's part of his growth. And so you want to be there to help him. Now, that leads to this point, and that is this idea of the supporting role. So it goes back to Genesis chapter 2 and verse 18. So go back to Genesis chapter 2 and verse 18, where it says, "It's not good that man should be alone. I will make him a helper comparable to him." And you remember in that, I talked about the what that word helper means. It's counterpart, companionship, partnership. You see, so again, it's a helpful role. I really like the idea of a help meet because it is there as helpful. Not something that's constantly, you know, which the proverb talks about where Solomon would write, you know, a contentious woman's like a dropping sink that's driving you nuts and a leaking roof. And there's, you know, in the word today is nagging always. That's not good. That's not healthy. That's not helpful. And so you're looking at being a helpmeet, playing a supporting role. I don't know if I've ever used this illustration, but I was told this a long time ago. Leonard Bernstein is a very famous composer back in the 20th century, so back in the 1900s. And he was asked one time, "What's the hardest instrument to play?" You know what he said? He said, "Second fiddle." Second fiddle. He says, "I got everybody that wants to play first chair, take clarinet, flute, and all that." He says, "But to get somebody to play the second fiddle with feeling and well and be a supportive role, that's hard to find because they all want the first position." And so that makes the point where, you know, no, this is the supporting role. And I kept thinking about in acting, you know, it's like best supporting role. You know, there's awards for that. Who did the best job of not being the star in the movie, but just did a bang-up job as a supporting character, you see? And so that's the idea. This is doing that to the best of your ability. This is your companion. This is your mate. This is your counterpart. And the wife holds a position in the marriage that's going to do what? It's going to balance it. It's going to complement him. That's the idea, which is why that saying came about that said, behind every good man is who? A good woman. And so if we think about this spiritually, behind every godly man, husband, is a godly wife. And that's the way it should be. It's a joint effort. Each doing their role as God has designed it and doing it to the best of their ability. Well, that's going to take learning. I think that sometimes that's why marriages perhaps are off to such a rocky start in the first couple of years, is because he doesn't know how to lead and she doesn't know how to follow, and they're trying to figure all that out. And they want to do what's right, but they're having to learn. So he makes mistakes and she makes mistakes, and they get after one another, and he blows up and he learns that doesn't work. So, you know, so there's a lot there. You got two people that are now trying to live in a home where the honeymoon is over. You know, it's all rosy for a while, but then you get to the day to day and things that bother you, you have to learn to let them go and things of that. You know, you get what I'm saying. So at least I hope you do. So that's important. So what's the first thing? Follow him. The second thing is to respect him. And that's found in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 33. So when you read down through the text of Ephesians chapter 5, and we haven't because the whole text has a lot of good things to say that I haven't covered, and you understand that. But when you kind of get down to the end of chapter 5, he says, verse 32, he says, "Well, this is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church," which is the point I made a while ago. He says, I'm actually trying to teach you something about Christ and his church. But then he says, nevertheless, but let's continue our thought for husband and wife. He says, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife. So it goes back to what's the husband supposed to do? He's supposed to love his wife. How's he supposed to love her? Like Christ loved the church. But then he says, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. I didn't put that there. I didn't come up with that idea. All I can tell you is this. If the Bible says it, the Bible made me that way. That men, it's good to have respect. And God says to the wife, you need to respect him. And respect is a translation, this was interesting, it's a translation of the Greek word phobio. Whoa, wait a minute, phobio? What word sounds like that? Phobia. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So if you look up this word and what it meant in the Greek, it is that reverential fear. All right? So I want to spend a little time on this. And it's been translated respect. King James, I believe, says reverence her husband. Okay? So what does that mean, that I respect him? That there is this proper fear. Well, I don't believe we're talking about that a wife is supposed to be afraid of her husband. And a husband doesn't want his wife afraid of him. If he's got her scared to death, then something's wrong with the husband, right? He's not doing things right. And so we got to go back to lesson number one. And he needs to figure some things out. But we're talking about this idea of a healthy respect and reverence like we see in the fact that perfect love casts out fear with God, and yet I'm supposed to have this reverential fear. So there's a lot in that as you think about this. But respect is an attitude. And following him is the action. Maybe that's why maybe it'd be better to flip those. But it's talking about to think highly of your husband and not poorly of him. And we've got a lot of lousy role models out there on television and everything else. I mean, men are just idiots and stupid and don't know anything, and they're just portrayed as just buffoons, really. And that's not the way God has designed this at all. A man likes to be respected, and he likes to be looked upon in good favor by his wife. He's going to thrive on his wife thinking well of him and wanting him to succeed. Men like that. And I know that God made man that way. And so I remember, this is kind of illustrates what we're talking about. So Uncle Fred. So my dad's sister, Aunt Levon, they were at if I understood it was right, it was at some kind of company gathering of something like that, and potluck. And so they're all the men are sitting around, you know, at their table, men at this table, women at that table. And she walked up and had made his plate and put it down. And those men, they said they looked in there and was like, how did you get her to do that? Is kind of the thought. Well, that was the relationship that she had. Did she make him look good in the gate? That's Proverbs chapter 31, isn't it? Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. Proverbs 31 and in verse 23. Let me get over to there. Speak well of him. Speak well of your husband. Don't be that wife that pokes fun at her husband. Listen, I've got a relative that he'd go, I'm the boss of my family, and everybody knows it. And everybody just laugh, and he'd laugh. Why? Because everybody knew he wasn't. Everybody knew who ran that home, and it wasn't him. And I've heard things like, he thinks he's the king. Or this one is when I heard this on the radio one time. Oh, he thinks he's the head, but I'm the neck, and I can turn that head any way I want to. That's the wrong attitude. That's not respecting your husband. That's not being this supporting role. That's not the kind of individual that God would have a wife to be. Turn over to 1 Peter chapter 3, which is a good context, too, for the wives, that talks about how her godly example can actually help convert her husband who's not a believer. But look at verse 6. Now, before you laugh, just understand the point. Verse 5, "For in this manner in former times the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are, if you do good and are not afraid with any terror." Now, I don't go around saying, "Lisa, I'm Lord Stacy." I don't know any of you. I've never heard any of you ladies calling your husband Lord. What's the point? She respected Abraham. She knew how important it was to be Abraham and Sarah, and she do her part. And the way in that custom was, she actually said and called him Lord or Master. Well, you know, that's not part of our culture. But there are things and ways that you can, again, you can poke fun or you can have the right spirit and have a different spirit than the example that's set all around us. Now, she respects his God-given role. That's another important part. God gave him that role, and she'll respect that. She doesn't fight against that. She'll respect that. And that flows from her respect for who? For God or Christ. You see, it goes back to who put this in order. Now, in Proverbs chapter 31 and in verse 11, there's another piece here that, and that is, be trustworthy. And I'll make kind of a pointed point here. But in Proverbs chapter 31, in our virtuous woman passage, in verse 11, it says, "The heart of her husband safely trusts her, so he will have no lack of gain." Well, be trustworthy. And that's something that's foreign in this day and time. The wife overspends, doesn't do the things that are beneficial to the family, and it puts so much strain on him. And I heard this point made years ago, and it's worth making now. And that is that sometimes wives enter into a marriage and they want the husband to provide everything daddy did. But you know what the difference is? He's just getting started. Daddy's got 30 years in a company. And so he's got plenty of funds now to spoil on his grandkids. And he, you know, it's different. These days, you're lucky if a guy can stay with a company a couple of years before he has to change jobs. And I was told that in college, by the way. Here I am a senior, and I was basically told, it's not going to be like your parents, your grandparents, where they could stay with GE for 30 years. He's like, you're going to be in and out. And you know what? That's the way, that's been a lot of, my brother, it's been the people around me. That's been their life. It's this company, that company. My brother was in a company where they said, we need you to help us whittle out who it is. And so he's helping them figure out how to whittle down people and get rid of people. And then they spun him off over to IBM. And next thing you know, IBM let him go. He's working for the same company, but that department got spun. Now he's gone. You see, so now he's back trying to find another company. You see what I'm saying? So that's been the practice many. So again, so for a young lady to come in and put that kind of pressure, well, daddy bought me this and I had the best of that, and that's not fair to him. Husband needs to trust her. And then in Proverbs chapter 12, just back up in verse 24, notice this contrast in Proverbs 12 and in verse 4. "An excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who causes shame is like rottenness in his bones." Well, that's a choice. Again, where am I going to fit in this relationship? Am I going to be one or the other? And God's given us the free will. I can either wreck a marriage or I can do my part in the marriage. Now, as I close, I want to look at one other passage in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and the first five verses, because what this will do is this will kind of tie it up for both the husband and the wife, but there's an important point that needs to be made that neither the husband nor the wife should do. Beginning in verse 1, "Now concerning the things which you wrote to me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Nevertheless, because of sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife. Let each woman have her own husband. Let the husband render his wife the affection due her, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another, except with consent for a time, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer and come together again, so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control." Now, the point I just want to make here is never in the marriage, husband or wife, should the sexual relationship be used in some way to cause harm. Withhold it. And yet that happens, and it destroys marriages, because that is an important part of the marriage. Don't withhold yourself from him. Don't you withhold yourself from her. That's where that can be taken care of, in the marriage relationship. And so, again, that is something that both in this text say there's a responsibility there. So I end the lesson as I did this morning with the men. Now, husbands, if your wife practices these truths, won't it make your role much easier? And the answer would be yes, just like I asked that question this morning. If we'll do as God has instructed us, then that doesn't mean our marriage is going to be perfect. But when God at the center and us striving to do His will, boy, we can have a happy marriage for a long, long time, because we all know, each partner, each spouse knows what God expects of them, and they rise to the occasion and they do their part well. And that's very important for us to do. And that's true when you think about other relationships, master, slave, you know, the Bible talks about those things too, you know, responsibilities that we have and in these types of relationships. Well, you might be here tonight, and we extend an invitation. It is a good opportunity that if there's someone that needs to have encouragement or needs to make anything know that they can do that. It's a good time when you're among the brethren to seek support and help. And if we can help anyone in any way, especially if someone needs to obey the gospel, they can have that opportunity tonight as together we stand and sing.